although the cost of the contract was $90 million, Jackson obviously didn't have $90 million sitting around. They issued bonds. The total cost of those bonds were $200 million. And the issuance of those bonds requires them to maintain a reserve fund. So between the lawyers, the deficit were created, and the reserve fund, there was very little left, less than $10 million from this $90 million settlement that Jackson had to reinvest in the water
and
system.
Siemens, and at this, Siemens yeah. saying, Judge, Siemens saying, Judd, that they went above and beyond their contractual obligations?
Well, that's what they're saying. Obviously, they agreed to pay $90 million, the full amount of the contract. So they must have, they acknowledged at least implicitly there that this didn't go well. When I contacted Siemens looking for comments on what's going on now, they said due to the nature of the settlement, they couldn't discuss it any further.
What's next? And what has most shocked you in your research? We have 30 seconds.
Well, next, they're going to try to find the money to pay for this. So far, the state has been very reticent to do so. There is federal money coming in through the infrastructure bill last year, through the American Recovery Act. And it's a matter of convincing the state to allow those funds to flow to Jackson. That would at least be a start in doing what's now seen as up to $2 billion in improvements necessary to get clean water to the people of Jackson.
And Governor Reeves saying privatization's the answer?
Governor Reeves is now looking at privatization. And so, you know, we may see history repeating itself. We'll have to see.
Judd Legum, founder of Popular Information. We will link to his new piece. This multi-billion-dollar corporation exacerbated the water crisis in Jackson, Mississippi. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Gesder, Messiah Rhodes. I'm Amy Goodman.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO.FM 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis. We are broadcasting today live. It is September 12, 2002. It is a couple of minutes past 8 a.m. I am Cecil Prescott, and I will be joined by my co-host Celeste Carey. We have been off of the air for a while, for a few weeks. We took some time for vacation. And now that the fall has returned, and lo and behold, like just on time, we woke up this morning and there was this gray mist and the ground was wet. Something we haven't experienced in Portland in some times. It seems vaguely familiar. I think it is called rain, and which is something that I guess is a sign of the season. Earlier this morning or late last night, notice where I live, the smell of smoke, which is another sign of the time, as the area is inundated by wildfires and smoke. Periodically, we've had blackouts or brownouts to protect the surface so that the power will stay on. But as it is at this point, the power in this community where we're broadcasting is still on, and depending on where you are, I hope that you are safe. Again, this is a broadcast that is broadcast throughout the world, not only here in Portland, but in the Willamette Valley and in the Pacific Northwest and the Western United States and the North America, you know, and the global community and beyond, I suppose. If you'd like to call and participate in our morning conversations, our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. And Ray, our great producer and engineer, will pat you on live so you may have a conversation. So, a lot has gone on in the past month or so. We are living in a world that's topsy-turvy, and things are changing from in our communities and throughout the world, and perhaps again beyond. I hope that we will have an opportunity just to share and check in to see where people are, what they are feeling as the fall begins. The academic school year has begun. Students are now back in school, and I guess for the first time in close to 3 years, we have managed to negotiate the pandemic so that schools and businesses are able, to some degree, to return to being in person, and that is something that is somewhat of a wake-up call for, I believe, for all of us. Over the last 2.5 years, we have adjusted our lifestyles, the way we work, the way we interact with one another, and reprioritize ourselves in terms of what we do and what is important. And as there is a rush to, quote, return to normal, end of quotation, there has been a pause or resistance in many ways, because we're saying we are living in a different world, a world in which we engage and interact with one another differently. So what are some of the things that have changed? Well, I just noted the way we work and the way we go to school. So online working and schooling became a norm over the last 2.5 years. And as we all know, that there are many communities and businesses that have altered the way they do business so that in-person work environments are becoming, if not optional, then as a means in which people can choose how to engage with one another. Now let me put a pause in that remote learning and working is not an option for many, many people. There is apparently a economic class divide in this, in that, remember when we used to honor in the evening those people and workers we called essential workers, those people who had to work in person, care for the sick, make sure that all people were able to get food? Well, for those who were essential workers, and I'm thinking of those who work in grocery stores, janitors, and other persons, including those who work in hospitals, did not have the option of remote working. And so, and those were the people who were most in danger of contracting the virus. That those were the people most at risk. And many of those people were those who were unable to have an option to say, I will work or go to school remotely. The digital divide for those in academic world became quite clear. Many communities which were not set up for Wi-Fi or high-speed connections found themselves at a loss. Many of those communities were rural. Many families who were unable to afford internet, again, we saw the divide. So that the option, the availability to either work remotely or go to school became a class divide. And so as we return to so-called normal life, we have a question not only for ourselves, but for our society. For example, in the academic world, many pupils have fallen behind in the last 2.5 years. Will we there be able to catch up, to return to what is expected of them in terms of their grades or where they should be in terms of their knowledge? We don't know. We do know that the divide that was also prior to the pandemic, which was one in which there was division by race and class, has only grown wider in the interim. And so we as a society must say not only what are our priorities, but what can we do to transform it. Looking at our nation and national life together, there has been a if not sea change, certainly an interruption in terms of the political, national political landscape. Up until 6-8 weeks ago, the common thought was that the president was on life support in terms of his political life and his political future. In the last 6 weeks of show, so in addition to executive orders, legislation that has passed, the wind has turned and seems to be at the president's back. Many commentators and those who review these type of thing say and speculate that there is some momentum for the president and his party, and that things may not be as bad for them as we thought they might be. On the opposite side of the political landscape, the former president continues to be in political and legal trouble. He continues a pattern that has been part of his life for decades in terms of, if not ignoring, trying to refuse to abide by court's mandates and resistance, and it has become an art. For decades, Mr. Trump has hired lawyers who for the most part, they don't pay, in terms of obscuring and delaying legal actions against him. This continues, and I wonder, what will happen? We will see in terms of Mr. Trump and the political future of not only Mr. Trump, but of his political party. And speaking of political parties, Labor Day in the United States is the traditional beginning of the election season. Now, throughout the past several weeks, there have been primaries in multiple states, and for the most part right now, the fall campaign has begun, and people can make decisions. So throughout the nations, there are a number of decisions, campaigns that people will vote on. The candidates, for the most part, have been chosen. The ballot initiatives and things that people will decide on have been laid clear. And now we are in the season of decision. For those who stay tuned to television, you know that's the case by the increased number of political advertisements, not only for candidates, but also for ballot initiatives, and for way in which people engage with one another. What will happen? Have you made decisions? Do you know who you are going to vote for and why? Outside of the political landscape, we are looking at, as we began our program, commenting on, in terms of, we continue to be becoming aware and threatened by the results of the climate crisis. Whether or not, as we mentioned in the beginning, is the wildfire season, which we see here in the West, begins earlier and lasts longer. Whether it is the threat of water or not water, as we heard those who listened to Democracy Now!, this discussion on the tragedy that continues to happen for the people of Jackson, Mississippi. And we can see also in terms of the impact of water and the way the climate has changed, not only in this state, but throughout the world. And we are concerned and became aware of what has happened in places like Pakistan. One final thought before we go to our caller is the situation of war in Europe. That continues to be a concern for the worldwide community. The United States continues to supply support, financial support for the Ukraine government. And I'm not quite sure how it will end. Certain media reports seem to say that the Russians are in a retreat. If not a retreat, it may be at a standstill. And I am reminded of how great powers over the last few decades have been unable to complete their military conquests, whether it is the United States in Southeast Asia, the Soviet Union in Afghanistan, the United States in Afghanistan, or right now Russia in the Ukraine. Those are some of my thoughts right now, but I want to invite you to participate and give us a call at 503-231-8187 and share what's on your mind. Good morning, Molly. Thank you for waiting.
Oh, well, thank you, Cecil, and welcome back. And I'm glad you had a nice holiday vacation or break, but there's a lot that's been going on, so let me just get back to one of your topics about, well, let's just say it's, call it education, because you mentioned the kids getting back after this pandemic, and there's so many issues right now. But let me just start with the passing of the Queen, because there's many countries in the world who are not mourning, and you know what I'm talking about, Kenya, places like that that aren't necessarily mourning. And you know, you mentioned a couple of years with the difficulty of the pandemic, and let's just go back a couple of centuries instead of a couple of years to, let me get my thoughts here. Well, okay, what I wanted to call in, and you were on your break, was the day of your last show, there was something, I think Amy mentioned it, the Woke Act, which was a law that targets critical race theory. This is to do with school here. And there's truth, there's lies, and then there's deceit. And this is what I want people to be aware of in our educational evolution here as a race. This was a controversial bill by the state governor, Ron DeSantis, Wrongs to Our Kids and Employees. That would be W-O-K, employees,
okay.
E, employees, woke. And I'm like, what? How did this get stolen, you might say? It restricts how companies and schools discuss certain aspects of diversity, equity, and inclusion, DE&I.
Yes.
Judge Waller blocked the employer portion of the law, saying it violates free speech and, quote, bordering on an unintelligible, the upside down of the show Stranger Things. Well, then I had to go and look all this up. So what I found was woke, alert to injustice in society, especially racism. Quote, we need to stay angry and stay woke. Someone who has woken up to issues of social injustice, this became more than just awareness, it became a word of action. So in 1962, the New York Times Magazine by William Melvin Kelly, titled If You're Woke, You Dig It, with an appropriation of African-American vernacular English, L-A-A-V-E, by white beatniks.
Yes.
Additionally, in 1971, the play Garvey Lives by Barry Beckham reads, I've been sleeping all my life, and now that Mr. Garvey done woke me up, I'm gonna stay woke, and I'm gonna help him wake up.
Mm.
Okay, so this is very critical to me, because it goes on to the let me finish my little notes. Erykah Badu's 2008 song Master Teacher featured the phrase I stay woke, popularized the word. In 2012, the Russian feminist group Pussy Riot, imprisoned for protests and oppression of women, Badu tweeted, truth requires no belief, stay woke, watch closely.
Yes.
Black Lives Matter movement used this hashtag, stay woke, following the murder of Michael Brown in Ferguson. So this is some of the history, and to me, the fact that it was appropriated by, you know, Governor Ron DeSantis is very scary, creepy, and unbelievable that he would try to take that word. I was, you know, Lamont Dozier just died, and the great Motown writer of all my favorite songs. Ruby Bridges is only 67 years old today. So the Multnomah County jury slapped a $4.4 million lawsuit on Walmart profiling shopping while black, bogus charges. So there's so much going on in the world today, but with the Queen's passing, that was the origin of white supremacy in the world. Sorry, I'm going on, but I have my notes.
Well, let me respond to a couple of issues that you touch upon, very, very important. Certainly, you began your remarks by noting the passing of the sovereign of England, and right. the resistance that some countries and individuals have had to the reverence to the passing of this sovereign, and rightly noticing, as people have remarked, that it ought to be a time of reckoning for colonialism, and the fact the impact colonialism has had in the past and continues to have, and that it may be it ought to be an opportunity to talk about it. So not only individuals but nations, and I'm close to one nation. My father's family is from Barbados, and in November of last year, in the only way that Bajan people can do this great ceremony, the Prince of Wales, who's now the king, was there as the people became a truly independent and rejected the sovereign of England as the sovereign of that nation. So, and there's that continuing conversation, and as you mentioned, in nations in Africa and in the Caribbean about that. So that's something that ought to be a issue of real concern. And I don't know, because we have this reverence for pageantry and all that is being lost or seen as disrespectful for people to raise these points. I want to also touch upon your remarks on the governor of Florida and the Woke Act, and I did not thank you for telling me the acronym, and also for you sharing some of the what I think is it's not unusual history or the way in which popular African American culture has been usurped, embraced, but sometimes taken over by the dominant culture. So I love your remarks you had in terms of the word just woke, and I would, you know, I think that's great history, but also it reveals in terms of how do we respond to these things. And finally, when it's specifically about the Woke Act and Florida, I think it allowed me to begin thinking about the. And this has been historical in the last 30 years, the terms in which school boards have become the battleground for a lot of these issues. And it has been a determined effort to take over school boards, and we see the results today, just as we see now in terms of the federal judiciary. And over the last couple of decades, Republicans have sought to insert the people they prefer on the judiciary, and we see the results now from the Supreme Court down to circuit courts. And right. and we also see the same thing now in terms of school boards throughout the United States, where there is a horrible attempt to ban books to try to say how schools should be taught.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, can I just add yes. that it's been known forever that young minds are the most pliable and easily to brainwash, to use a word,
yes.
To say this is how it is, believe me, and you can see this in every religion. You know, you mm-hmm. learn from a young age, this is what it is, and nothing else is true except this. So of course they would be going to that level, because that's where you can get this complete control. But to get back, and then I'll give other people a chance to call in, to your remark on the workers and how, you know, that in, well, like the Queen in the beginning of white supremacy throughout the world and India and all these places, because they, and Africa, where they needed the resources, and the countries didn't need England, but England needed them.
Yes.
So we have with these essential workers, basically slavery is your best essential worker. This is how this country was built and how many countries were built, the pyramids of Egypt and everything. So I love your show. I miss you when you're gone. I'm going to let other people talk because there's so much to talk about right now. Thank you, Cecil, for your show.
Thank you, Molly, and thank you for your words and your wisdom. And, you know, if you're able to either send me the link for where I can find what you just talked about in terms of woke and how it's been used over the last few decades.
Well, yeah, you know, I was so outraged when I saw that being used in a different way that I Googled it, and that's my link. And the wonder of the computer, which we talked about on one of your shows, and all this new technology, one thing I love about the computer is you can Google absolutely anything. And I had a conversation about the power of words, too, and that didn't end well for me because, for instance, the N-word, which can be spoken within the black community because of the power that it held over that community that was so degrading, but a white person, I might say, can never speak that word. And that's just an example of the power of words. So I'll leave it there.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your call.
Yeah,
and stay well.
You too.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I continue to be Cecil Prescott, and our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We've just had a short conversation with Molly, who responded to her thoughts on the times we're living in, gave a reflection on the conversation about how people respond to the passing, the death of the sovereign of England, and the resistance and the political resistance to equality by such acts such as the Woke Act in Florida, and how the governor of Florida, this legislature, not only in Florida, but continue to battle against attempts to create a more equitable society. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187, and let's go to Robbie. Thank you, Robbie, for calling.
Hey, it's always good listening to you on Monday mornings. I'm always looking forward to it, and I like hearing the topics you have to share and bring up. I think one thing that's really big on my mind is 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
We just passed the anniversary. Was last year that we did the major withdrawal from Afghanistan and basically cut off money there. But I think the biggest concern I have is that Americans, or at least people around, you know, people I know, especially people who are activists, kind of have blinders on with this particular subject. And it's just so, it's frightening to me, because I think if we can't come to, you know, some type of a conclusion with what are the facts that happened on that day, what can we, you know, how are we going to have the accountability, and how do we prevent that from happening again? And I just think that it's really weird watching how there's, like, we can't talk about that event because of how traumatic it was. But when you're looking at it, this one day, you know, September the 11th, 2001, was a moment that we are still having to deal with the forever wars, mm-hmm. you know, all the African, AFCOM, the African, you know, how the CIA is involved in Africa now.
Uh-huh.
Actually, Homeland Security,
yes.
and a lot of the Border Patrol all came out because of that. The TSA came out about that. And this is still a subject that we can't, you know, dissect. And I'm just so concerned, because if we can't do that, how can we have, I don't know, the proper discussions, like how can I ever participate in a democracy when we're still living in what I would consider a giant lie, a giant facade? And it's been a little bit better. I guess I hate to say this, but I've and I'm sure this is turning off a lot of people, but I was considered a 9/11 truther in 2003. And so I was very for the cause in 2003, and that was taboo at that time. You couldn't say that. What's happened over the past 15 years is people's blinders kind of lift up. They get a little bit more, okay, let me look into this. It's not so scary anymore. Let's dissect this. And then all these coincidences come out with how 9/11 happened. And it's like, how many coincidences do we have to tell ourselves before we're like, oh, yeah, the government probably did this so we could go to war in Middle East and have the public approval that would do so, and all this, you know, that has happened because of that. So I think we can't get anywhere if we can't come to that conclusion or discuss it even.
Well, let me engage with you in some conversation about this, because I think it's accurate that in terms of people concerned about the origins of 9/11, what happened that day or days leading up to it, and you know, just you know, it should be, you know, one observation is that for those who are younger than older millennials, 9/11 is history. It's something they haven't experienced, and we have a generation that has grown up where this has been in the background, and so they have no living memory of that day, of the events around that day, and what it means to a whole society. One other observation, for those who are older, this whole issue about what has happened in throughout certain events and who's involved in it, and government or secret government or secret forces relationship to it has become, quite frankly, a cottage industry. I'm old enough to remember the whole discussion around the assassination of Robert Kennedy, Robert Kennedy as well, but John Kennedy in 1963, the grassy knoll. So that was something that people were concerned about. And, you know, I think my fear is that people will lose themselves in the weeds, and instead of, and that, you know, those might be important discussions, but I think the important thing is what has resulted from that. So you mentioned in terms of the Department of Homeland Security, the forever wars that have resulted in those. Those are things I think people are able and willing to, should be able to talk about. And I think we can do that and make some progress in terms of talking about, well, where are we now without, I think, losing ourselves. I mean, it may be important to talk about, you know, the so-called theories about 9/11, but I think...
Well, I don't like to talk about theories. I really don't like to talk about theories, and it's. I hate to cut you off. I'm sorry. Uh-huh. I just wanted to I do think that, you know, again, there is, you know, this is going to happen again if we can't observe what happened. And getting lost in the weeds is kind of what happens when people muddy the water. Like, for instance, I did a 9/11 truth booth last year with a group. We went out to the PSU campus and we put up all the evidence that we had. The, you know, there's the, I can't think of the 9/11 jurors, the engineers and architects. We had all this, the facts of it, right? Just the stuff that makes you question, like, hey, this doesn't make sense. Why did the NIST not cover this? Those things, I don't want to sit here and start theorizing about what is and what isn't, but I will point out to people the facts. Like, for instance, Donald Rumsfeld went on TV on September 10th and was like, hey, there's like $2 trillion missing or whatever. And then very next day, September 11th, nobody cares anymore. You do have Cynthia McKinney, who I don't know if people know who she is, but she's actually, if people look up Cynthia McKinney drills Donald Rumsfeld, you will see probably the most heroic congressperson ever drilling Donald Rumsfeld about who ran the 9/11 war drill games.
And again, my point, and we might debate, you know, when I say theory, whether versus truth, it's that isn't my point.
These are
my point is that this, is, and whether we can talk about 9/11, we could talk about John Kennedy, we could talk about what happened and December 6, 1941, before the bombing of the Pearl Harbor. These type of things have existed throughout our history,
flag operations, yeah.
And so the point is that you know, people like you are doing very important work, historians are doing very important work, but I think a way in which to engage people is saying, these are the results, and what do we do about it moving forward? We have another caller waiting, so I'll let you summarize, because this is an ongoing conversation, but continue.
Yeah, please. And I appreciate you allowing me. I'll just finish it with this. I think that we need to bring up the facts and be cognizant of it, because it's going to happen again. We can't just look at the results, because if you don't know how it happened and how you got there, you can't prevent it from happening again. And, you know, I just want to say the 9/11 war drill games are a massive coincidence. The World Trade Center 7 falling is another massive coincidence, with Larry Silverstein acquiring the insurance policies for all those World Trade Centers and insuring them to be insured in the event of a terrorist attack, which he filed two for. And then ironically, Marvin Bush, the Bush family, was running the security for the 9/11 whole 9/11. He was running the security for the World Trade Centers. And they were all doing all sorts of stuff. There's so many coincidences and it's just funny, because I feel like the blinders just go on, and all I'm trying to do is bring up the facts. And it's like, I'm not theorizing at all. Marvin Bush was the head of security. His company was doing the security outfitting of both the World Trade Centers.
Right. Okay.
In the months leading up to it. So it's like, how many times are there these coincidences? I'm not theorizing. These are facts.
Well, and the fact is, for me as a philosopher, theory is not a bad word. It's a way of looking into the world. But we have to go on.
Well, I'll end it with this. I'm a conspiracy. I prefer conspiracy theorem. That's actually my website. That a good friend of mine. I don't know if I can. His name's Chuck, but conspiracytheorem.exposed. Is a website, and I think it's because that very notion of a conspiracy theory has a bad connotation with it, and people assume it's not real. And it's funny, because people will say stuff like, oh, that's a conspiracy, and mean that it's not real, when in reality they're saying, oh, that's just the theory. So it's a very interesting term, but I think that's how they've been able to not make us, you know, put up these blinders, so to say.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Robbie. And we'll go to, you are listening to More Talk Radio. We've had a couple of conversations, Robbie talking about 9/11, Molly talking about the passing of the sovereign of the United Kingdom, and let's see what Francis has to say this morning. Good morning, Francis.
Hi. I agree with a lot of what your last caller said, and I don't know that... it's part of the whole process that we have going on, but when Mark DeSantis says that Florida is where woke goes to die, what he's basically saying is, we don't tell the truth here. Uh-huh. That we tell lies, because woke is waking up to the lies. One person, though, there that I just found totally refreshing, who is a politician in Florida running for Congress, is Maxwell Frost. And he speaks the truth to everybody. It's pretty impressive how he can keep the conversation apolitical and just talk about the issues. He's a young man. He's only 25. And that's another thing that we seem to, you know, one of your callers was talking about how youth are impressionable. Youth get really upset when they find out they've been lied to.
Yes.
And they become very active. And I think that's what's happening now, you know. So I wouldn't be so pleased with myself if I decided to keep the truth from the young people,
mm-hmm.
because they're just going to be extremely annoyed and extremely active when they realize they've been lied to.
Yes.
And here locally, I, in an effort to maintain wokeness, today at 6 p.m. on the corner of 6th and Northeast Halsey,
yes.
there will be a commemoration. They're making a permanent mm-hmm. plaque and designation today to honor Keaton Otis. And if anybody can go, it would be wonderful. It's a monthly thing on the 12th of each month.
Yes.
But it was 13 years ago, May 12th, that Keaton was executed by the Portland Police Department. And we haven't forgotten.
No.
And the truth is still the truth. One thing about the truth, it can be covered up with a whole bunch of BS, excuse my language, but it's still there. It never goes away, ever.
That is so true. Yeah. Thank you so much for mentioning.
If anyone can attend this commemoration today, it's at, as I said, 6 o'clock, the corner of Northeast 6th and Halsey. A lot of the meetings have been through Zoom and stuff, but there's always somebody there. And today, I think, because of the commemoration, there will be a lot of people there. And to just tell one little factual truth about that, where they tried to dismiss his death as some kind of a reaction to his mental health, Keaton had, I think, something like 27 wounds from being blasted by the police. One of them was in his right hand. The others were all underneath his left arm, down to his side. So what does that indicate to you? It indicates to me that the man's hands were up. So, I have a hard time talking about it because he's a personal friend of our family's, but we need to recognize that our media has a way of helping wokeness get smothered all of the time. And right now, you know, nothing has really happened as a result of all of the protests after George Floyd's death.
Yes.
But meanwhile, we're talking about this man and his seditious insurrection every day, all day. And now the Queen, every day, all day. Let's talk about what's real every day, all day. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing the event that will take place 6 o'clock this evening. Keaton Otis has been a community grassroots effort by many people. And as you noted, there's a monthly commemoration on the 12th. And today at 6 p.m. at the place where Mr. Otis was assassinated by the Portland police on Northeast 6th and Halsey, there will be the memorial, which is really wonderful. This permanent memorial will be, I wanted to say unveiled, but you may participate. So I encourage all those who are able to join. Thank you so much, Francis. And you are listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO. Let's go to Mark. And good morning, Mark. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning, Cecil. You and Celeste have done a marvelous work, life-giving work, in emphasizing the countervailing power of truth and liberating ethics. I uploaded two great articles today on indiebay.org. One is titled Questions, Sanctions, and the other is a great summary of liberation theology titled The Cry of the Poor. Mm. You know, we're living in a world of broken traditions and of a distrusted government, of depoliticized people. This is one common trait that we have with Russia. People are depoliticized. They're totally disillusioned. The system is broken and out of control. Christ is the end of the law, according to Romans 10. So by faith, those who believe are justified. That's very exciting news, and particularly exciting in times like ours, when the truth is often falls by the wayside, and the donor class just pursues their own interests. I appreciate Robbie's points and how we are blinded. We have blinders on, and there's also the anarchist watchword that if elections changed anything, they'd be outlawed. Uh-huh. I kind of agree with that, and so I hope you will check out this great article, "The Cry of the Poor." It summarizes Latin American liberation theologians. One of them was Dom Helder Camara.
Yes.
Who said, "But before the prayer, we had the land and they had the Bible, and after the prayer, we had the Bible and they had the land."
Yes. Which I think is so appropriate and related to what people have been talking about, the colonial past, and in terms of the death of the sovereign of England.
And that
article, "The Cry of the Poor," is on indiebay.org? Or?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, great.
So I hope you will check it out, and thanks again for your great work.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you for your work and for your kind words.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And Harry is on the line. Good morning, Harry.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. The first subject is the Queen passing. 70 years on the throne, but everyone has to remember that she was queen since 1952, but if I'm correct, why Kenya was very upset was in 1954 was the Mau Mau rebellion,
yes,
where hundreds of thousands of people were massacred in Kenya. And what was her thought of a colonialism? And because of all these African countries under their control had to fight for their independence. So I would like to see some readings or her thoughts, her memos, of what she thought of colonialism and black people and apartheid, especially apartheid. Because England was a big supporter of the white South African country. And but the good news is there's a good possibility that England, that the new Charles the First, Charles the Third, might be make Britain a republic. Remember, Britain is not a republic. It's a democratic government, but it's not really a republic. Would that help their country?
Right.
The second thing I like to bring up is when you talk about 9/11, we had a lot of independence here in Oregon because we had cable access, and people were talking about what we saw and call at the same time call in radio and call in television. They stopped everyone from calling in and say, "How can you say this happened? I saw this," and some more information. A good example is when they attacked the Pentagon. In front of Time magazine, you see the Pentagon building, and then you see the hole where the plane hit. And it's just, wait a minute. And they someone took a facsimile of the plane, they put it and said it would have took out the whole side of the Pentagon, the one of the sides of the six sides of a Pentagon, and it would have taken it out. And they took one of the engines of the 757 and they put it right next to the hole, and the engine was bigger than the hole. And it was just like, you know, and we weren't allowed to say, but luckily Portland had cable access, so a lot of people caught on what was going on. The last thing I'd like to bring up is you were gone, and over the summer, it was the 50th anniversary of Wattstack. And I remember that when it came out. It was a gather of musicians in California, and Jesse Jackson was the headliner, and all types of music. Because I remember they came out with a movie and they came out with the album, and I remember buying the album. Oh, that's all I have to say. Your opinion, your thoughts.
Hey, you said a lot of good things, and I wanted to go back. I don't want to spend too much about the sovereign of the United Kingdom, but a couple of observation in terms of relationship with colonialism. And you know, I don't think we'll ever know what her thoughts are, or we'll see her writing. That's just because that's how they operate. We won't have any. Well, we'll probably have some books to tell all, but I doubt we'll have her words. But I think it's important to think about, you know, on her 21st birthday, when she gave this memorable speech that she would be forever. She will serve her country, her kingdom, with heart for the whole of her life. And she gave this speech, which was sort of like her coming out, while she was in South Africa. A few years later, when King George, her father died, and she found out that she was queen, she was in Kenya. So just the whole beginning of her reign is just soaked with colonialism. And I think the resistance to do anything to talk about it might be somewhat familiar to what an earlier caller, Robbie, said about 9/11, and what you also suggest, Harry, the inability to confront the evidence with what we see. So thank you so much for your calls and for your thoughts, Harry. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO FM. And I just wanted to say that Celeste just really appreciate it, your comments about Wattstack in 1972. She just texted me. She said, "Yeah, Wattstack, yes." So it's great. It was sort of like a time of, I didn't forget about Wattstack, but that was an amazing time. And I'm also just reminded of the film that Questlove produced that won the Academy Award, and its name, thank you so much, Ray. Some of you people talk to search engines on your computers, and I won't name that. I won't use a company's name as a verb. So you use a search engine. My search engine is Ray, and Questlove film was Summer of Soul, which took place in 1969 at the Mount. At the Garvey Park in Harlem, New York. So look at Wattstack, 1972, and Summer of Soul, which took place on the other coast, to get a feel of the times. And you're listening to Mort's Talk Radio. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. I've been Cecil Prescott. And next week, Celeste and I will be here, and we will continue our conversation about things that are happening in our world and that we are experiencing. I want to thank so much those who were able to call in this morning. Thank you, Molly, for opening our conversation. Thank you, Robbie, for challenging us and being able to talk about things we find difficult, talking about 9/11. Thank you, Frances, for remembering Keaton Otis and reminding us to go participate in the unveiling of his memorial on Northeast 6th and Halsey this evening at 6 o'clock. Thank you, Mark, for pointing us to the cry of the poor and liberation theology. And thank you, Harry, for concluding our conversation. We began with the passing of the sovereign of England, and for we end with some of your remarks and by again pointing about the power of colonialism. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott. Thank you, Ray, for being our engineer. We will talk with you, hopefully, next week. Have a good day.